For centuries, Pacific Islanders have been sharing stories that connect us across the region. Stories from the Pacific is a weekly program that continues that tradition, bringing you deep and personal stories from a diverse range of people. Athletes, farmers, artists, teachers, activists, entrepreneurs, all united by their Pacific heritage and incredible journeys.
Listen to Stories from the Pacific on your favorite podcast app.
This is an ABC podcast.
Here on Sisters Let's Talk, we've spoken to some of the most remarkable women in the Pacific, activists, carers, and leaders. Have you ever wondered what these women were like when they were young? When you look at the youth of today, I also see activists, carers, and leaders in their community. So today I want you to meet some of those young women and find out what drives their passion for things like the environment and protecting vulnerable people. I'm Natasha Metten. Sisters, let's talk to some remarkable young women. Sabina Mothe is only 24, but for the past decade, she's been a passionate advocate for people with disability. She is also a mentor to young girls through the Pacific Girl Program, which is run by the organization SPC, or the Pacific Community. Sabina was born with albinism, which means she has reduced melanin, causing her skin and hair to be white. Growing up in Fiji with this condition led to bullying and exclusion from her community. This inspired her to speak up for those who aren't always given a voice.
Growing up as a young person with disability, I faced many challenges. When I began my advocacy when I was back in early high school, I saw the difference, how people treated people with disabilities differently. And two areas that I told myself that I wanted to advocate on was accessibility and inclusion. These were the two areas that I wanted to advocate on, speaking on accessibility, on how we could make spaces, services, and information more accessible for people with disabilities. Also looking at opportunities and inclusion, like how we could include people with disabilities in programs, projects, activities within the community, within organizations, and looking at a bigger scale.
And how has living with albinism shaped you?
I guess it's made, like, growing up with the different challenges that I faced, bullying and discrimination, it has molded me into a strong-headed young person, in the sense that I'm able to stay in the space and advocate and speak confidently about my experiences as a young person with disability, to share my story so that people would have a fair idea of, you know, what I go through on a day-to-day basis.
And Sabina, how old were you when you started to do advocacy work?
I started this advocacy work when I was 15, where I was first invited to share my story during International Albinism Awareness Day.
And tell me how you came to join the Pacific Girl.
I came to join the Pacific Girl through an invitation that was given to the Pacific Disability Forum under their youth program. They had reached out and told PDF that they were forming this youth working group. And it's been a very inspiring journey.
I see. And what does it involve?
For the youth working group, we work closely with the Pacific Girl Program, the Pacific Girl Reference Group. Our job, or what we do mainly, is support and mentor the young girls in their different spaces that they do advocacy on, whether it is disability, GBV, leadership, entrepreneurship. We give advice on the different areas that we work in. But for me specifically, I mentor them a lot in including the space of inclusion.
Mm-hmm. And as a mentor to young girls, what wisdom do you share with them?
Some of the knowledge that I passed on is to my fellow colleagues was the importance of understanding the different impairments, the needs that they have, and how to best accommodate them according to their needs. I've always talked to them about inclusion practices, inclusion language, and how we could be more inclusive in the activities that we plan and implement.
Sabina, you mentioned you spoke in public about your experience with albinism when you were just 15. Did that take a lot of courage as a young person?
Oh, yes. It took a lot of courage, took a lot of practice. While speaking and sharing my story, I cried because, you know, sharing about the challenges that I face on a day-to-day basis as a 15-year-old took a really big toll on me. Mm-hmm. It took me out of my comfort zone, and just sharing my experiences, man, it got me crying a lot. But I guess, like, out of that experience, I then tend to understand the importance of sharing your story, because it's so unique that no other person may face that same challenge. I've come to also understand that different people have face different challenges, and the severity of those challenges may differ. And then it made me reflect on not one shoe fits all.
I'm glad it didn't put you off continuing to share your story. What was your key message when you gave these talks?
My key message was, I may be different, but we're still the same. You know, even though I may be a person with disability, I can still do what others can do, but maybe at a slower time. But that shouldn't be a factor on how people should treat me.
Exactly. And Sabina, what's your message to people about giving youth a voice and listening to them?
My message to everyone out there, to young people, would be, come out of your comfort zone. Never underestimate your skills, your knowledge, and your potential, because what you do today may change the future. Everyone has a voice. Everyone has a story. Share your story, because your unique story may change the way people see things and decide on things that they may come across.
That's Sabina Mothe, mentor in the Pacific Girl Program and advocate for people with disabilities.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Anne-Marie Raduva has also been an activist since she was a teenager. She and her sister Faith distributed dignity kits with soap, pads, toothpaste and toothbrushes to cyclone-affected parts of Fiji in 2020 after Cyclone Harold hit. But her main passion is for the environment.
I started my advocacy journey when I was about 15 years old. I started off by watching a YouTube video of a turtle that died from swallowing a balloon fragment. And after watching that video, I floated the ideas to my parents. And the first advice they gave me was to pray about it. And from there, we started organizing our beach cleanups, writing to the newspaper, lobbying the Fijian government to relook at the Fiji Litter Act Law 2008. And then after a few months of creating awareness, we started looking for an eco-friendly alternative rather than releasing balloons. And that was through mangrove planting.
And why is climate and environmental activism so important to you?
Climate activism, environment, is important to me because it really helps us understand, like, our surroundings. And as a Pacific Islander, the environment or the land and sea is very important to me because it is my home. It is also part of our identity. It is part of our culture. And if we lose that to the climate crisis, then we have not only lost our islands, but we lose our culture, identity, and tradition, as well as Pacific Islanders and as a Fijian.
Yeah. And how has growing up in Fiji shaped your perspective on climate change?
At a very young age, my parents have always made me participate in community work. I remember when I was 13 years old, I participated in the Junior Park Ranger for the Sinotopus Indians. And from there, my sister and I, we started understanding the importance of keeping our environment clean. Not only that, but we also joined a lot of youth groups in environmental sustainability. And with all those knowledge and experience, and then organizing my own environmental initiatives, whether it's through mangrove planting initiatives, cleanup campaigns, it really made me realize how much people don't really have that civic pride. Even though our laws and our acts have changed over the years in terms of sort of making our environment better for everybody, it's really, really bad. I'm not gonna lie, in Fiji, we really need to work on our environmental climate action plans and policies, and also giving a lot of people that space to talk about it. I feel like there's a lot of barriers in Fiji, to be honest, and not only in Fiji, but around the world and in the Pacific. You know, when we talk about climate action, youth empowerment and engagements, and just really trying to relate that with everybody and in every spaces in Fiji in terms of environmental conservation.
Yeah. And could you tell me more about the mangrove planting initiative? What does it involve?
The mangrove planting initiative started in 2018. My parents helped me organize that initiative. We started off with less than 20 people, friends and families and relatives. And we planted 2,000 mangroves. And from December 1st, 2018 till date, the Young Eco Champs and I have planted more than 180,000 mangroves along the Suva Foreshore. And we continue to plant until we can't plant no more. I feel like there's less awareness on how important mangroves are here in Fiji. A lot of people focus more on tree planting, but they don't realize how important mangroves help in lowering our carbon emissions, act as natural habitats for our wildlife or marine ecosystems. And I think through the amount of times we've been organizing mangrove initiatives, we've seen a big change in people getting more engaged into mangrove planting initiatives now. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's a really good peace-building activity for everybody.
And Marie, what have you learned about how government and policy works by lobbying for change from such a young age?
To be honest, I'm still lobbying the Fijian government to relook at the Fiji Litter Act Law 2008. I know it has been renewed, but they've just involved harsher penalties. It's not really a concrete or a long-term initiative to let the people be aware of how important it is to care for the environment. We have read and have heard our leaders talk about so many new policies that are going to be in place in our laws. But to be honest, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. There's a lot of gatekeeping within the climate system or in the climate space here in Fiji. And it is really, really hard trying to work with our government and with politicians because they really, really look down at us. And when a young person talks about climate action and youth involvement, you know, they question us with, what is your qualification? What's your experience? You're too young. Our tambo system here, and it's really bad. But I'm really, really glad that there's a lot of youths in Fiji that are involved in the climate movement, and always is bad for the better.
Anne-Marie, have you faced any challenges or pushback as a young activist?
I mean, the challenges, they come in many forms. One of the biggest challenges that I faced when I started was, you know, competition and being compared to other activists, not only in Fiji, but internationally and regionally as well. I remember when I had my first speaking engagement at the IUCN conference, and the media started labeling me as Fiji's Greta. And, you know, at that time, Ms. Thunberg was doing a lot of amazing things in the climate space. And I do respect her as a person and the work and the efforts that she has done. But in reality, if we continue to compare activists with other people, you know, we lose our original story and we lose our authenticity. One of the other challenges is tokenism. And I think that's, you know, one of the ongoing challenges that we face till today. You know, inviting us to spaces and not listening to our concerns and the messages. You know, it's not climate inclusion. It's a climate joke. And the more we continue to focus on being symbolized as a person in those spaces, you know, it really, really loses the momentum of what we are trying to do as activists in terms of keeping our planet clean, trying to achieve a more sustainable future, not only for our future generations, but also for us as well. One of the other challenges would be cyberbullying. I remember my parents were always responsible for my social media platforms, and, you know, they'll try and hide some of the nasty comments that people would say. Some people would say, like, oh, so you're raising awareness on balloons, or you're also raising awareness on condoms. So those are the kind of things that, you know, our people really need to change their mindsets. And it's also a sad reality that when young people talk about an important issue, they are always looked at as a threat, a person of interest. You know, we are not really taken seriously off. And I think in the Pacific and in Fiji, we may not have the respect we deserve as youth leaders, but in many years, we have changed the narrative and we've always pushed forward for change, despite how challenging the journey is. And, you know, we really need to understand and realize how powerful our voices are in these spaces. Not only realizing that, but also walking the talk.
Sorry that you had to face those, Anne-Marie. What was it like to speak in front of these crowds from a young age?
To be honest, before I started, I was a very introverted person. It got into the point where my mom would have to order my food or like do everything because I was so scared of interacting with people. And that after watching that video and after experiencing doing community work at a very young age, I realized that my voice is also powerful, and that if someone doesn't do anything now, like, who will do it? Why wait for 20, 30 years and then continue with action when we can really start at the root of it? And then I had my first public engagement and I was so scared. I had butterflies that turned into, I don't know, different insects. But then I remembered my mom. She kept encouraging me and she kept saying that, you know, you are a future leader. You will do amazing. You are loved, you are important, and you are Anne-Marie Rondova. And, you know, after hearing those words of encouragement, I stood on stage and I just spoke my heart out. And after that, I realized, I was like, wow, I did that. And then, you know, for how many years now, my mom has always been a pillar of strength and encouragement every time I have public engagements, speaking engagements. I still have butterflies to this day. And yeah, I still get stage fright. But the message that we share in these spaces are way more important than the butterflies that are in our tummies.
What has been the most exciting win you've achieved in your activism?
I think the most exciting win throughout my activism would probably be the day that I started doing activism work. You know, my campaigns all started with a prayer, and it will always end with a prayer. I do cherish all the achievements, all the challenges, and all the disappointments and the downfalls of my journey as an activism. And, you know, that's who I am. That's my story. And, you know, I can't change all of that. I wouldn't trade it for the world. But to be honest, the day that I started activism is the day I realized that, you know, I have a purpose and I have a calling, and that is not only to be just a leader in the future, but to be a role model and an inspirational person, not only for my siblings, not only for my cousins, but for the children and youths of Fiji and around the world.
What message would you like to share with other young people around the Pacific who want to make a difference in their communities?
I think one of the main messages that I would like to share is to use our space and platform to create change. And, you know, don't use it for visibility or publicity purposes. We as youths, we also need to understand that there's a difference between being an opportunist and being a protagonist. A lot of people say that in every opportunity, you must take it. But when it deals with the lives of our people and the lives of our islands and our planet, we really need people that can execute these climate policies and climate actions so that it is beneficial for the long run. And, you know, if we continue to have that mentality of using the climate space as a form of opportunity, then we are really, really recycling that same behavior that we've been experiencing from the first COP till now. And since COP 30 is just around the corner, you know, are we really going to let this cycle repeat where everybody attends this conference and then leaves with no action plan or strategy? As young people, we need to realize how powerful our voices are in making change. And we also really need to walk the talk. And that would be my message.
That's Anne-Marie Raduva, yet another passionate young woman who is helping to make the world a better place.
You're listening to Sisters Let's Talk on ABC Radio Australia.
Staying with environmental activism, my final guest, Vepaya Mele, is only 16, but she has taken a passion for climate protection all the way around the world. She was the youngest member of a delegation from Vanuatu to visit the International Court of Justice at The Hague in 2024. She was there for hearings on the campaign led by Vanuatu to hold nations accountable for climate change. Vepaya Mele is a youth ambassador on climate for Save the Children.
I am very passionate about climate change because I know and I see that it has very severe implications on my future and the future of all the other youth like me. And also, I can understand that it will affect the future of future generations as well. And so in Vanuatu, we see the effects of climate change every single year, every day for that matter. We still experience the effects of cyclones that happened 2 years ago, and it's still having effects on our economies and our communities. And it's very sad to see. And so as a Vanuatu youth, I feel like I also have responsibility to speak up for climate action and advocate for more climate action because I see how climate change is and will be affecting our lives.
How is climate change impacting your life in Vanuatu?
Climate change affects virtually every aspect of life in my country and in many countries around the world, and especially in the Pacific region. We have more extreme weather events and unpredictable weather patterns as well. And so these things threaten our food security. It makes coastal communities more vulnerable to sea level rise. It diminishes our education and healthcare access. Every time we have a cyclone, we have children who were put out of school for weeks. We still have children who were in tents, learning in tents, and because their classrooms were destroyed by cyclones that happened 2 years ago, or even a cyclone that happened in 2015. So it's really sad, and it affects every aspect of our lives. In many places too, it's also affecting coastal communities, and it's washing away graves and ancestral things like that. And so it's affecting our past, our present, and our future.
Vepaya Mele, you traveled with a country delegation to The Hague. What was that experience like?
Yeah, so last year I traveled to The Hague in the Netherlands with the Vanuatu delegation, and this was for all the proceedings in the International Court of Justice for an advisory opinion on climate change. And so it was basically many countries, and they went forward to the court to ask them what are state obligations in regards to climate change. And yes, I was there as the Next Gen Youth Ambassador. I wasn't in the court presenting anything, but I was involved in media engagement and activities surrounding the event. And my main objective was to amplify the voices of young people in Vanuatu and in Pacific. And yes, it was an amazing experience, definitely, yeah, an experience of a lifetime. It really showed me the power of unity, how really when you do come together, you can achieve anything.
Yeah. And what was it like to be the only person under 18 to travel with the delegation?
It was definitely an experience being the only one under 18 traveling. It was really inspirational, though, because this whole initiative about the ICJ was brought to the ICJ by youth. It was brought to the UNGA and the ICJ by a group of students from MLS campus, USB in Vanuatu. And it was really great. And even though I was young and I was under 18, I was surrounded by people who really understood the importance of youth voices and youth representation. And so I felt very supported, and it was a great experience.
I have to ask, where does your passion for activism come from?
I do come from a line of very strong advocates. All my grandparents were politicians and very involved in the fight for independence for Vanuatu in 1980. And so I guess I've grown up in a household, in a family where we've all been taught to speak up about what we believe in. And my mother's also a Supreme Court judge, and my grandmother is a very renowned poet in Vanuatu as well. And so, yeah, I think my confidence does come from my family and those that I've been surrounded with over my life. And yeah, they all support me as well. So it's great.
Yeah. Does it take confidence to be a young activist?
Yes, I think it does. I think with practice, though, it gets easier to voice your opinions and to know that you have a right to be speaking. I think as a young person, you just have to remember that your voice does matter and that you can make a difference as well.
How supportive are your family of your role as a youth ambassador?
My parents, I would say, are definitely my biggest supporters in everything that I do. And yeah, I'm probably often described as someone who says yes to everything, but I think that's only possible because of the support that I have. And yeah, my parents always help me accomplish the things that I want to do. And so I owe a lot to them.
And what grade are you in at school?
Yeah, I'm in year 11.
Have you thought about what you want to do after you finish school?
Yes, I'd really like to attend university after I finish school. I'm very interested in medicine and healthcare, but really one of my main aspirations, I guess, would be to improve the healthcare system in my country because I see how bad it is. And I would like to work in a role that helps improve that. So yes, either medicine, healthcare, or even environmental science, which I'm very passionate about that.
What's your message to other girls who want to stand up for what they believe in, but aren't sure how to find their voice?
I would say just go for it and don't ever be afraid to speak up, because as young people, our experiences and our voices are very, very valuable. And especially in this fight for climate change too, it is our future that's going to be affected. And so never be afraid to speak up.
That's the inspirational Vepaya Mele, a youth ambassador on climate for Save the Children. Thank you to my guests today, future leaders for their cause, Anne-Marie Raduva, Sabina Mothe, and Vepaya Mele. Speaking to them today gives me so much faith for the next generation of young women coming up in the Pacific. Sisters Let's Talk is presented by me, Natasha Metten. Our supervising producer is Kim Lester. Our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu Inga Stunzna. Sisters Let's Talk is an ABC Radio Australia production. We acknowledge the Yagara, Turrbal and Darumbal peoples on whose land this program is produced. Amtasol na lukimu next time.